most impressive for the physician. La production de ces images, que chez l'homme éveillé fait le plus souvent naître la volonté, correspond, pour l'intelligence, à ce que comprend la modalité certains mouvements que nous offrent la chorée et les affections paralytiques. For the rest, he considers the dream toute une série de dégradations de la faculté pensant et raisonnant. Page 27. It is hardly necessary to mention the utterances of the authors which repeat Maury's assertion for the individual higher psychic activities. According to Strumpel, some logical mental operations based on relations and connections disappear in the dream, naturally also at points where the nonsense is not obvious, page 26. According to Spitter, page 148, the presentations in the dream are entirely withdrawn from the laws of causality. Radstock and others emphasize the weakness of judgment and decision in the dream. According to Jodl, page 123, there is no critique in the dream and no correcting of a series of perceptions through the content of the sum of consciousness. The same author states that all forms of conscious activity occur in the dream, but they are imperfect, inhibited, and isolated from one another. The contradictions manifested in the dream towards our conscious knowledge are explained by Stricker and many others on the ground that facts are forgotten in the dream and logical relations between presentations are lost, page 98, etc., etc. The authors who in general speak thus unfavorably about the psychic capacities in the dream nevertheless admit that the dream retains a certain remnant of psychic activity. Wundt, whose teaching has influenced so many other workers in the dream problems, positively admits this. One might inquire as to the kind and behavior of the remnants of the psychic life which manifest themselves in the dream. It is now quite universally acknowledged that the reproductive capacity, the memory in the dream, seems to have been least affected. Indeed, it may show a certain superiority over the same function in the waking life, vid supra, page 10. Although a part of the absurdities of the dream are to be explained by just this forgetfulness of the dream life. According to Spitter, it is the emotional life of the psyche that is not overtaken by sleep, and that then directs the dream. By emotion, Gomuth, we understand the constant comprehension of the feelings as the inmost subjective essence of man, page 84. Scholz, page 37, sees a psychic activity manifested in the dream in the allegorizing interpretation to which the dream material is subjected. Seebeck verifies also in the dream the supplementary interpretative activity, page 11, which the mind exerts on all that is perceived and viewed. The judgment of the apparently highest psychic function, the consciousness, presents for the dream a special difficulty. As we can know anything only through consciousness, there can be no doubt as to its retention. Spitter, however, believes that only consciousness is retained in the dream, and not self-consciousness. Delboeuf confesses that he is unable to conceive this differentiation. The laws of association which govern the connection of ideas hold true also for the dream pictures. Indeed, their domination evinces itself in a purer and stronger expression in the dream than elsewhere. Strumpel, page 70, says, "The dream follows either the laws of undisguised presentations, as it seems exclusively, or organic stimuli, along with such presentations, that is, without being influenced by reflection and reason, aesthetic sense and moral judgment." The authors whose views I reproduce here conceive the formation of the dream in about the following manner. The sum of sensation stimuli affecting sleep from the various sources, discussed elsewhere, at first awaken in the mind a sum of presentations which represent themselves as hallucinations. According to Wundt, it is more correct to say as illusions, because of their origin from outer and inner stimuli. These unite with one another according to the known rules of association, and following the same rules, in turn evoke a new series of presentations, pictures. This entire material is then elaborated as well as possible by the still active remnant of the organizing and thinking mental faculties, cf. Wundt and Weigand. But thus far no one has been successful in finding the motive which would decide that the awakening of pictures which do not originate objectively follow this or that law of association. But it has been repeatedly observed that the associations which connect the dream presentations with one another are of a particular kind, and different from those found in the waking mental activity. Thus, Volkelt says, In the dream, the ideas chase and hunt each other on the strength of accidental similarities and barely perceptible connections. All dreams are pervaded by such loose and free associations. Mare attaches great value to this characteristic of connection between presentations, which allows him to bring the dream life in closer analogy to certain mental disturbances. He recognizes two main characters of the délire. 1. Une action spontanée est comme automatique de l'esprit. 2. Une association vicieuse et irrégulière des idées. Page 126. Mare gives us two excellent examples from his own dreams, in which the mere similarity of sound forms the connection of the dream presentations. He dreamed once that he undertook a pilgrimage to Jerusalem or Mecca. After many adventures, he was with the chemist Pelletier. The latter, after some talk, gave him a zinc shovel, a pelle, which became his long battle sword in the dream fragment which followed, page 137. On another occasion, he walked in a dream on the highway and read the kilometers on the milestones. Presently, he was with a spice merchant who had large scales with which to weigh Mare. The spice merchant then said to him, "You are not in Paris, but on the island Gilolo." This was followed by many pictures, in which he saw the flower Lobelia, then the general Lopez, of whose demise he had read shortly before. He finally awoke while playing a game of lotto. We are, however, quite prepared to hear that this depreciation of the psychic activities of the dream has not remained without contradiction from the other side. To be sure, contradiction seems difficult here. Nor is it of much significance that one of the depreciators of dream life, Spitta, page 118, assures us that the same psychological laws which govern the waking state rule the dream also, or that another, Dugas, states, "Le rêve n'est pas déraisonnable."